In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about six hacks for building your mailing list. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 188. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Rob?
You got some good comments on episode 185 about moving from Windows to Mac. And Robert Graham specifically laid out a bunch of really cool keyboard shortcuts. He says that he's been exclusively on a Mac since 2000. He talks about something called alfredapp.com, which helps with the command space search. It helps improve it even more. You know, command space allows you to kind of search anything on your box, but Alfred allows you to configure that even more. And then JumpCut. Which is jumpcut.sourceforge.net, creates a history and a buffer for your clipboard, which obviously would be pretty cool. Windowing is improved by ShiftIt, he says, and he gives us a link. It's all in the comments for 185. Just a lot of good tips for some other stuff that we didn't cover about text editing, taking screenshots, and that kind of stuff. So I want to send a thanks out to Robert Graham for that.
Very cool. Thanks. I think we've talked a little bit in the past about getting a good set of headphones for listening to podcasts or working out and just trying to get in the zone. But I came across Bose Quiet Comfort 20i noise canceling in-ear headphones. So I already have a pair of noise canceling headphones that go over your ear. And I'd always wanted in-ear headphones that were noise canceling, but I could never find them. And I guess Bose came out with these in-ear headphones. And I was using them the other day when I was mowing the lawn. I couldn't hear anything. I was just listening to podcasts. It was great. It was fantastic use of like an hour and a half of my time.
Wow. In-ear headphones that blocked out the lawnmower.
Yes. It was awesome. I couldn't believe it. I didn't expect it to work as well as it did. And I also have in-ear headphones that don't have noise canceling, but I tried these out and they're expensive. They're like $300, but they work really, really well. I mean, I couldn't hear the lawnmower. I couldn't hear the weed whacker. And it was just everything in my ear was crystal clear.
Yeah, that's impressive. And that's the kind of stuff, you know, when I talk about listening to 50 or 60 podcasts, it's because I'm listening to them all the time that I'm not, like, when my brain is not occupied, right? So it is when you're mowing the lawn or when I'm out doing yard work, all that kind of stuff. And so it really is a nice way to get some time back. If you do have room for kind of the bulkier over-ear headphones, I use the Sennheiser HD280s. I think they're about $80 or $90 on Amazon. What were the ones that you got that are in your ear?
It's the Quiet Comfort 20i.
Got it. A few $100, so it's an investment. All right, well, we have several new reviews in iTunes from Cozy200. He says, just another fan. Fantastic show. As a new bootstrap startup founder, I rely heavily on my developers and shows like yours for guidance through the process. We are extremely bootstrapped, well, more like strapped than anything else. But a quick shout out to you both. Thanks for helping the entire community improve. And a Sun Watcher from the UK says, this is an undiscovered gem. I only recently discovered the show after reading a post on Hacker News about useful podcasts for startups, and it's awesome. I've listened to it consistently for a couple weeks, and it has reinvigorated my motivation to push some niche SaaS apps to market. And Tyler Banfield from the US, he says, this is the only podcast I'm subscribed to. I think the title says it all. While I enjoy listening to a variety of podcasts, this is the only one I view as a can't miss. Not only is there always something actionable and relevant in each episode, but Mike and Rob's initial discussion of what they've both been working on with their own projects is always a nice dose of motivation. If you're running your own business, working on a side project, or just want to start creating something, this is a podcast for you. So as always, thanks a ton for the reviews. If you've been listening, getting value out of the show, we'd really appreciate it if you would log into iTunes and give us a 5-star. You don't even have to write the full review. You can just do a 5-star rating without having to spend any other time, and we very much appreciate it. So what are we talking about today?
Back in episode 72, we had talked about 8 tactics for building a pre-launch mailing list. So we talked a little bit about, you know, leveraging your existing audience and doing some SEO and trying to rely on some viral content like infographics and things like that. And then where to try and pick up people to add to your mailing list. So whether it's Hacker News or Facebook ads or a variety of other places where you could do advertising, Twitter, Facebook. What I think we're going to focus on today is specific hacks that you can use to grow an email list. And this is based off of a blog post by Jeff Bullis, who provides 6 simple tips to grow a large email list. And we'll link back to this in the show notes, but we've got kind of our own take on some of these and kind of modified at least one of them kind of substantially. The first one is to turn your pricing page into a lead generation page. And this is something I'm actually in the process of doing for Audit Shark for the pricing page. And something I've seen somebody do is request contact info before showing pricing. So So this is an interesting idea because it gets you people's contact info and it allows you to follow up directly with them before they even really start looking at pricing or signing up. So if you have any sort of a long sales process or it's a complicated sales process, I think that this is something that can work really well. There's definitely cases where this is not going to work. So if you look on anyone's websites now, like for example, I don't think that it would work very well for Drip because the sales process and the value proposition for that, I'd say, is probably fairly straightforward for most part. But for something like Audit Shark, compliance is a complicated product. It's a complicated proposition to make to somebody. So I think that getting that contact information from people so that you can follow up with additional marketing is a much better way to go in cases like that. But as I said, there's definitely cases where doing something like this is not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, for lower priced, obviously for B2C, it's probably not going to work very well. And for lower priced SaaS, the odds are you're going to be able to get someone to sign up for a trial rather than having to get on their list. But I agree with enterprise, more complex stuff, a new product that needs to be explained, any of that stuff. That's why you see the HubSpots and the Kissmetrics and, you know, a lot of the more expensive apps out there. They really have a lead gen form, right? They really want you to call and talk to someone or to do a demo or to sign up for a webinar. That's the call to action rather than actually getting you to sign up directly on your first visit, because they know that it's such a big decision that you really need more information before you can do that. And that's where doing lead gen on your pricing page instead of trying to push people towards a trial is obviously a win.
The next hack is to use popovers on your website, and more specifically, use something like an exit pop-up. The way an exit pop-up works is while they're on the page and viewing it and working through the content, you're not going to show any sort of pop-up. But as soon as they try to move the mouse cursor off of the website, you know, maybe up to the browser bar so that they can click on the back button, it'll throw a pop-up to the person and ask them to either subscribe or provide their name and email address or take some sort of other call to action. And there's a lot of variations of this type of thing that you can find at WordPress.org, like WordPress pop-up or pop-up domination. But at the end of the day, the idea is pretty similar. You're really trying to drive them to a call to action to get them on your mailing list or to get some sort of contact information from them so that you can follow up with them later. At the end of the day, it actually works. People use them. Internet marketers use these types of things because they work. The other things that are a little bit less intrusive, I'd say, is something like Hello Bar. The real key to using a pop-up successfully is to not be a jerk about it. I mean, you really want to measure what works and what doesn't. And anything that's working to drive people onto your mailing list, you want to use those things. And anything that isn't, that's driving people away, you want to avoid those things.
Yeah, I mean, I'd throw out another non-intrusive pop-up is the Drip widget, right? It's in the lower right of your screen. And it's kind of like an OLARC chat window. And it just pops up unobtrusively after X seconds. You can configure it to do that. And the reason we went with that is because I agree. I'm not a big fan of the really big, you know, take over the screen pop-ups. With that said, you have to ask yourself what you feel comfortable with. I think it's each person's decision as to how much they want to optimize something, right? How much they want, they're comfortable optimizing it. Like, I will probably never have, and I never have had, basically a light box that comes over my blog website to try to build my mailing list. I know that it would build it faster, but I also know that over-optimizing it creates kind of a negative experience for some of my users, and I'm not willing to do that. And so you have to ask yourself that, you know, if just because something works, do you want to go to that point? You know, if you think about like selling something, let's say you're trying to sell something in a presentation or sell something on TV, the maximum amount of optimization is to do an infomercial. Like all the stuff that they do in those infomercials where they, you know, say only three low payments of this, and but wait, there's more and all that stuff, it really works. But at a certain point, you have to ask, well, do I want to go to that extreme to eke out every last percentage point? You know, I think it comes down to kind of a personal or a brand decision at that point.
The third hack is to follow a strong writing formula for your blog posts and for the content that's on your blog. And you can definitely do these types of things in landing pages as well. But you really want to, for your blog post, you want to have like a clean intro to a specific problem. You want to include some sort of a story because, you know, statistically, people remember stories significantly more than they remember actual numbers and statistics. And they'll remember that story and they'll relate it to statistics and then they'll go look it up. But they won't remember the statistics themselves. They will remember the story. They just won't remember the exact numbers that went with it. The other thing is to make sure that there's value for your target audience. And when you're looking at the value that you're going to provide to that target audience, you want to know who that target audience is. Are they a beginner in your field? Are they intermediate? Are they advanced? Who is it that you're actually talking to? Because not every blog post is going to be able to talk to everybody who's at each stage of using the type of product that you're offering. So you want to make sure that you're talking to a very specific audience and know what it is that you're offering to them. And then the next step is to make sure that you're crafting a great headline for that blog post and then publish it with a call to action of some kind. You want people to take an action after they have read the blog post, and whether that's a pop-up of some kind or just a little footer at the end of it where you say, hey, if you want to hear more information, you know, subscribe to this newsletter.
Yeah, and something interesting I found running an experiment on softwarebyrob.com, which is my blog, was that in terms of getting folks onto the email newsletter, the right-hand side, the upper right, which is my sidebar, that widget got way, way more. And I don't remember if it was like 3 times or 4 times, but it was substantially more signups than did the signup thing at the end of blog posts. And I thought that the signup thing at the end of blog posts would be it, right? Because that's where a lot of the individual traffic comes to. Someone reads the post, and then at the end it says, you know, did you like that? Do you want to hear more like this? It just seemed like the natural place to be kind of asking someone for their email address. And yet, I mean, it was good enough to keep around, but nothing compared to that upper right position. And obviously your mileage may vary depending on your blog, but it was nice to be able to test that and know for sure. And then what I noticed is that, you know, I had put it at the bottom of like my about page and a couple of my pages that are non-posts, and those got almost zero signups. So pretty confidently, I could take those off and not feel like it was hurting my subscriber growth. But at the same time, I felt like it was cleaning up my site, right? It was simplifying and actually improving the user experience, but kind of without hurting the newsletter signup process. So definitely in terms of that call to action and all this stuff, you do want to kind of test as much as you can. You don't want to go overboard with it if you don't have a ton of traffic, but I get enough traffic that it was worth figuring out the difference between those two.
The fourth hack for building up your mailing list is to use landing pages that provide incentives to subscribe. So whether you're offering an ebook or videos or screencasts, that you can offer interviews, cheat sheets, case studies, any of those things are good things to offer people in exchange for their email address. And most people will be incentivized enough to provide an email address because honestly, what's an email address worth? I mean, they can always come back and unsubscribe. Obviously, you have to make sure that you're going to let them know up front. You're not going to spam them. They can unsubscribe at any time. Because nobody wants to give away their email address to somebody who's just going to hand it out to everybody or sell it off. There are definitely things that you can use, like those ebooks and screencasts and things like that, to help incentivize people and give them something in return for that email address.
Yeah, the nice part is that you can reuse content, especially if you do have a blog. A lot of people don't go back and read early posts, but they can still be very valuable. So at one point, I had a virtual assistant go through and I told her some posts that I wanted her to gather together. She put them in a big Word doc. Then I paid a designer to format it. And I now have a 170-page PDF ebook, and that's at a 12-point font. I mean, it really is almost a full-size book. And it's all writing that I had done over the past, you know, 7 or 8 years. And I had it packaged up really nice. And that is one of the incentives that I hand out. And so just because you have older content that you've already published somewhere doesn't mean you can't go back and use that as an incentive if it is, in fact, something that someone's going to want to read. I've also seen something working lately, or I've heard really from Clay Collins of Lead Pages, but he said that having something that's very specific to the actual post, assuming that post is getting enough traffic to make it worthwhile, but having something specific to the post really escalates how many people will opt in. So if you write a blog post about a specific kind of landing page, then they, you know, Lead Pages will give away that landing page template as HTML at the bottom. Or if you're talking about how to craft specific types of emails, then giving away an email template at the bottom, or giving away an Excel spreadsheet that has something to do with it, like that will accelerate your opt-in rate. And it makes sense, right? Because it's in context. It's not kind of a generic giveaway. It's actually something relating to the post. Now, I think you'd want to probably publish the post and either know that it's going to get a lot of traffic before you create that giveaway, or watch it as traffic builds over time, you know, through SEO and other viral stuff, and then create the lead magnet. Because to be honest, you probably can't do this for every blog post. You need to pick and choose, and you want to put your effort where, you know, you think there's actually going to be enough traffic.
The fifth hack is to run A-B tests on critical elements once your web page or your blog reaches a critical mass. And if you are drawing enough traffic in to be able to run these tests, then you definitely want to start testing your headlines. And Google Analytics will help you kind of identify which pages are getting the most traffic. Obviously, if you have any other type of tracking software on your website where it's able to track what web pages are getting the most traffic, you can use those as well. But there are also WordPress plugins where you can use them to automatically do A-B testing on some of the different headlines, for example. I think AppSumo has one, but there's other ones as well. So those are the types of things that you want to start testing. If you're not using WordPress, then it's not terribly difficult to code your own, but you definitely want to figure out which ones are resonating with people and which ones aren't, and use those headlines. Another thing that I've done in the past, which has been helpful, is to use something like Bitly, for example, where you are going back to a particular web page and creating those URLs. And then on Twitter, if you're posting those URLs using very specific headlines, people see the URLs, but they don't necessarily see where the link goes until after they click on it. So you can test the same URL with different headlines in Twitter and see which ones are resonating with people. And the sixth hack for building your mailing list is to essentially keep your subscribers happy, because you don't want to have people onto your mailing list if, you know, in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks down the road, they leave because you're abusing them as subscribers. I mean, you want to provide relevant content to them. You want to think twice before you start hitting that publish button and really think about what is it that you're sending to them and are you providing value to them? The last thing to keep in mind is that you have to understand that not everyone is going to read everything that you write. And as Rob mentioned earlier, he had a lot of his content from his blog repurposed into an ebook for his website to give away as an incentive. But you can repurpose a lot of that content into your mailing list, because not everyone's going to go back and read everything that you've written. So repurposing content has its place, but it doesn't mean that every blog post should go into your newsletter. You shouldn't go all the way back to the beginning of time and start sending those out to everybody, because there are going to be people who have read those. And if they start seeing things that they've already read, or if they see too much of that slanted in that direction, they're probably going to unsubscribe and you'll lose them as subscribers. So you do want to keep your churn rate down.
I think another part of keeping your subscribers happy is sending stuff that's super, super relevant and obviously really valuable to them. And there's this movement and this change that I see coming in email now that I'm knee-deep in the email marketing space with Drip, is that people are, in terms of folks who have successful newsletters, the thing that they're doing differently is they're using this behavioral email that sends subscribers different emails based on behaviors they take. So if someone makes a purchase from you and they buy a specific book, then you now know that they have an interest in that and that they're a customer, and you can start them on a different sequence based on, you know, them clicking that button. Or if they click on a lot of links that involve SEO, you tag them with the SEO tag, and then you start sending them more SEO links and less about conversion rate optimization or whatever. This behavioral email stuff, and I'm talking about this because at first I wasn't a believer. I mean, this was even a year and a half ago where I didn't quite get it yet, but I'm really understanding the power of the ability to go from one to many, right, which is what email marketing is today, to going down to one to a few, to where you're really talking and customizing your newsletter, your list, just your whole movement through your funnel and your relationship building, and you're able to customize that for multiple people. And that's why we launched this rules engine in Drip, the automation rules, the behavioral email aspect. I'm still trying to figure out how to talk about it. It's amazing the stuff that you can do and the stuff that you can build with this. And I'm not just talking about Drips. I mean, there's Infusionsoft and there's Office Autopilot and there's, you know, other ways to do it. But just that entire concept, I think that's where we're all going to be moving. I mean, I just think that's the future of kind of personalizing this email stuff. So that, I think, heavily ties into this keeping your subscribers happy point. So hey, I also wanted to add, I think maybe a bonus seventh tip, and it's just based on my experience building my mailing list. It's really all embodied. I've done some split testing and then it was just some best practices, but it's all embodied in the subscribe form at softwarebyrob.com in the upper right. And if you look at it, I want to call out a few elements. First thing is, I don't call it a newsletter. I did at one point, but I quickly realized like that feels generic and it feels like something that a corporation is handing out, right? It's their quarterly newsletter. So I call it Growth Secrets for Self-Funded Startups. It's not a newsletter. It's not an email list. It doesn't say join the list. It doesn't say anything like that, right? It just talks about Growth Secrets for Self-Funded Startups. The call to action, which is the button, it doesn't say subscribe. It doesn't say sign me up. It says get the book, That's what it says, because that's what people want. And then I have a couple bullet points. And the bullet points I have are what you get for signing up. And the bullet points are a 170-page ebook collecting my best startup articles from the past 5 years. And then the next one is previously unpublished startup-related screencasts. Okay, so you're getting stuff that no one else is getting. And the third is exclusive techniques I don't publish on this blog. And then lastly, I have a quote. It's a testimonial. This is all in a pretty compact space. It sounds like a lot of information. It's really tiny. And like I said, I have tested some parts of this and seen that this iteration of it performs the best. I think having a quote is kind of a big deal. And I think having multiple things really describing what people get for signing up and putting a lot of value there, like a 170-page ebook filled with startup articles, is actually pretty interesting. As I'm reading this, I would probably change it to say like startup tricks or startup growth secrets instead of just articles. Kind of want to throw that out as a framework of a decent way to really describe that if you're going to get someone to buy in, the type of information that you're going to want to give them in order to, you know, get them to get over that friction of giving you their email address.
I think those are all really great tips. I mean, I do something similar on my blog. I mean, I don't have anything there for my mailing list where I say flat out that, you know, you're going to be getting these things. But I basically tell people that they are going to get actionable advice, tips, and stories.
I think that about wraps us up for the day. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.